I spoke up here a few months ago about seven ages in the family of God that I was considering, and biblically the oldest one of those ages. And I asked the question, what was that? What is the oldest age that we're told about in the Bible? And it's the age of God and God, just two gods, being present. One who later became the Father and one who became Christ. And then the second age we find in the Bible is the age of angels. And Mr. Schallenberger in his message mentioned the earthquake and feeling comforted by an image of one of these angels, by the angelic presence. So the second age we find in the Bible is that age, the age of angels and angelic spirit beings created by God as part of the spirit family plan. And I ask the question, just what are angels? Just what are angels, and why do they exist? Why in the spirit family plan did God create these angelic beings? Are they different? Are there different types of angels out there? And I was considering, too, as we think about features and features of children that are like their parents, and Job 38 describes these angels as the sons of God, as they all shouted for joy when they saw the creation. So why do they exist? Why do we have these beings, these angels? Look with me in the book of Psalms, in Psalm 91. It's really fascinating, I think, as I was looking through this and considering what we find. Psalm 91, verse 1. He who dwells in the secret place of the Most High shall abide under the shadow of the Almighty. I will say of the Lord, He is my refuge and my fortress, which I know we feel that way, and sometimes more than others. My God, in Him will I trust. Surely He will deliver you from the snare of the fowler. And here it's an image of a man catching birds with his snare. He will deliver you from the snare and from the perilous pestilence. Verse 7, 1,000 may fall at your side, and 10,000 at your right hand, but it shall not come near you. Verse 11, because you have made the Lord, who is my refuge, even the Most High, your dwelling place. No evil shall befall you, nor shall any plague come near your dwelling, for He shall give His angels charge over you. So those angelic beings, and God at times commands His angels to guard and protect His people. And we don't see them. We don't see them. So I'm going to work a good bit today from our booklet about angels. And it's up. Great, good. Thank you, Mr. Bryant. And I've had this one for a while. Many of you probably have this book. And I just wasn't getting around to it, but I finally did. And you see the title there, Angels, God's Messengers, and Spirit Army. So there are things revealed in that title. Angels are God's messengers. And we can find them doing this, and we'll look in Matthew and Luke and Daniel, and God's angels being sent to bring messages to humans. And the title also tells us they're God's spiritual army. And I saw more than I was really aware of as I finally went through this book, and it does raise questions. If they have that title, just who are they fighting? Who are they fighting? And the answer is the other spirit army, Satan and his angels, or the demons, and keeping them at bay, away from us. So it is a somewhat lengthy booklet. It's about 50 pages long, but you'll find if you get into it, it's an exciting message. It considers how long angels have existed. And the answer to that question is, we don't know. We do know that they were created before the physical universe, before humans. And our booklet also asks, do angels have freedom of choice? So what's the answer to that question? And the answer is obviously yes. I see heads shaking. We know they do because a third of them chose. It was their choice. A third of them chose to rebel against God, while two-thirds chose not to. Two-thirds chose not to, and in both cases it was their choice. How many angels are there? How many did God create? We're in the book of Psalms, so look in Psalm 68. Psalm 68, words of David here in verse 7. Get to the right psalm. There we go. 68:7. O God, when you went out before your people, when you marched through the wilderness. And so this is Christ in the Exodus going before the Israelites, marching out. This is Yahweh. This is the Eternal. This is the God who became Christ and was accompanied by, here we'll find his spiritual army. Verse 8. The earth shook, the heavens also dropped rain at the presence of God. Sinai itself was moved at the presence of God, the God of Israel. In verse 11, the God gave the word, great was the company of those who proclaimed it. And so I have a superscript, a little D beside the word company in my Bible, and another word often used is host. Great is the host of those with God. Here that we're reading about, leading Israel out of Egypt. Verse 17, the chariots of God are 20,000, even thousands of thousands. The Lord is among them as in Sinai in the holy place. So in reference here, great, good. I just put together some PowerPoints, sent them to Mr. Bryant a little late last night, and so I appreciate his efforts to get these for me. The chariots of God are 20,000 with these angelic beings bringing the Israelites out of Egypt with God, with Christ, even thousands of thousands, thousands of thousands. So a thousand is a million. Thousands here, plural, there are millions of angels here with Christ, with Yahweh, with the Eternal, leading his people out, a very large spiritual army of angels accompanying Christ at that time. We could go there, I won't, but the Apostle John, and this is Revelation 5, described even more angels around the throne of God. And in this case, that chapter says 10,000 times 10,000 plus thousands of thousands of these spirit beings. So 10,000 times 10,000 is 100 million. 100 million plus millions more. Daniel 7 gives another view of God's throne in this case. Let's do check that one out. Daniel 7. Daniel 7 and starting in verse 9 here. I watched till thrones were put in place, and the Ancient of Days was seated. His garment was white as snow, and the hair on his head was like pure wool. His throne was like a fiery flame. We'll see everything about this is so bright, and fire is often an example given, like fiery flame. Its wheels like burning a fire. A fiery stream issued and came forth from him. And so this is in vision, just the power of streams that look like fire coming forth in this seat, in the scene. A thousand thousands ministered to him. 10,000 times 10,000 stood before him in this vision. So this is, again, a view of God's throne. And it's the same number that we saw in Daniel. This 100 million plus millions more. So the answer is there are a lot. There are a lot of angels. It is a vast army. And my interest, again, is what's it all for? What's it all for if we cut to the end of that? Something else interesting, and you're aware of this, these angels sometimes appear to humans without being recognized as what they are, as angelic beings, but just seem to be other humans. And it made me think of a story, and this is one in the family, and we all have them, and it was one of my aunts who has passed away now a good number of years ago. She was a favorite aunt by my two brothers and me. And this was when She was young, married, had two young kids in the back seat of her car, and her car died on the highway, and she coasted to the side and got stopped just barely off the road. It was a highway. The speed limit was 55 or 60, and cars were whizzing by, and it would make her car shake, and she was afraid. And it was warm, and her car window was open, and she said all of a sudden there was a man. And this is a story she called to tell my mother because it impressed her so much. She said, there was a man beside my window, big smile, and he said, you're not safe here. We need to move you over. And he put two hands on the side of my car, and he walked my car off the road, is what she called to tell my mother had happened in that case. And she turned to look back at her kids again and appreciate how much further she was off the road, looked out the window and said the man was gone. So just what happened there, I don't know exactly, but we do know Hebrews 13:2 has words that make you wonder about things like this. And I'll just read, some people have entertained or kept company with, is what it means, angels without knowing it. So that's kind of an amazing thing. Angels did keep company with Abraham. We're in an age now where we don't seem to see too much of this. That was likely to change as we move ahead. But look in Genesis 18. As these beings come to visit with humans. Genesis 18, verse 1. Then the Lord, and we see the capital L-O-R-D, the Yahweh, the God who became Christ, appeared to him by the terebinth trees of Mamre, as he was sitting in the tent door in the heat of the day. So he lifted his eyes and looked, and behold, three men were standing by him. And when he saw them, he ran from the tent door to meet them and bowed himself to the ground. And he said, my Lord, and just words of respect there, if I have now found favor in your sight, please do not pass by your servant, please let a little water be brought and wash your feet and rest yourselves under the tree, and I will bring a morsel of bread that you may refresh your hearts. After that, you may pass, but stay a little while with me, is what he's saying. You may pass in as much as you have come to your servant. So if we continued reading here, we would see Abraham did a bit more than bring a morsel to them. He did have their feet washed and fed them and arranged to have them rest and be refreshed. And maybe suspecting, but not knowing for sure, that these were angelic beings and more and not just men. Angels don't need to eat, we know, but we find here that they clearly can. Verse 16, if we jump ahead, and I'm going to look a little bit in here as well. He brought quite a bit of food to them, prepared a calf. Yeah, I see that. And Abraham ran, verse 7, to the herd and took a young good calf and gave it to a young man, and he hastened to prepare it. So he took good care of these visitors. In verse 16, then the men rose from there and looked toward Sodom. So this is the Sodom and Gomorrah story coming here that we're approaching in verse 19. And Abraham went with them to send them on their way. So can we be sure that these were really angels and not humans? Let's see how they're described next. Chapter 19 and verse 1. Now the two angels, these are these men, really angelic beings, if we continue forward into this chapter, came to Sodom in the evening, and Lot was sitting at the gate of Sodom, and Lot saw them, and he rose to meet them, and he bowed himself with his face toward the ground, and he said, hear now, my lords, please turn in to your servant's house and spend the night and wash your feet, then you may rise early and go your way. And they said, no, we will spend the night in the open square. And Lot knew better, and he insisted strongly, so they turned in to him and entered his house. Then he made them a feast and baked unleavened bread, and they ate. So angels appeared to Abraham and Lot here as normal men, and they weren't sure. However, they are, these beings are very far from being normal or from being humans. They're far from being the way that they chose to look in this case. these angels are not in their normal glorious form here as they've come. So let's put them back into their glory as we look. And go to Revelation 10, just a verse here, as we consider these beings and their appearance and what they look like. And I like to think again what implications that might have for the resurrection. Revelation 10, verse 1, I saw still another mighty angel coming down from heaven, clothed with a cloud, and a rainbow was on his head, just color, beautiful color. His face was like the sun. And so if we really appreciate that, and his feet like pillars of fire. So consider that and remember what this angel looks like here as we go forward. Face as bright as the sun. Feet like pillars of fire. Implications for James and for us and for the resurrection. And so next I wanted to ask, are God's angels organized? And you know God is very structured. Is there a government among the angels? Are there leading angels, ones for which we're even given their name, names that God has given to these? What are these chief angels, these leaders called? Look in Jude 9. We're right beside Jude in front of Revelation here, 1 chapter, verse 9 in Jude. And so James was always James to me. And today he was James Michael or Michael, and I didn't know that. But here's that same name. Yet Michael, the archangel, is contending with the devil when he disputed about the body of Moses, daring not to bring against him a reviling accusation, but said, "The Lord rebuke you. The Lord rebuke you here." So this is Michael the archangel. And it's a term that means a chief angel or a chief messenger. And so why would this chief angel, this leader of angels, not bring accusations against Satan, but just said, "The Lord rebuke you"? And it's because Satan is still on the throne of this planet, and it's a position that God has allowed. It's something God's allowing, and we are told to respect our leaders. It's like David when he cut off the corner of Saul's cloak in the cave and then later felt guilty because he treated God's anointed that way with disrespect. And it's something I need to remember at work and elsewhere when we're talking about leaders of this country. And I feel like I want to criticize. And God says he places whom he will in those positions as part of his overall plan of what he's accomplishing. So it's like Michael. We have to be careful of criticizing a process that God has in place and is allowing. It's part two of why we recommend not voting, because we don't know which person God wants in that office. And I might vote for person X and you might vote for person Y. And one of us may be voting for a person God didn't want in a position at a given time. So our kingdom is not the kingdom of this world right now. But back to archangels. We just read about an archangel named Michael. That name means who is like God. Who is like God. Daniel 10:13 refers to that same powerful angel as one of the chief princes, meaning a leading ruler in this angelic realm that's out there. Note those words, one of the chief princes. So that seems to imply there are other chief princes, other ruling angels. Daniel 12:1 calls Michael the great prince who stands watch over the sons of your people. So in those words, we learn some about this archangel's job, is standing watch over God's people. So think about that. That still applies for today, for these powerful angelic beings. And I like to think, too, it might be interesting if we could see this spirit realm. Now we can't, but if we could each Sabbath at services and what might be around us. I don't know. For another powerful angel, we could consider the one who rebelled, and that's Lucifer, who became Satan and who desires now the end of all humans. And that's part of the job of the spirit army to prevent that, because it would happen if it was not prevented. And Satan does have his army. He's copied God's organization and has one of his own with different ranking fallen angels. So if we thought about that, different ranking fallen angels under Satan, we might consider, for instance, a prince of the kingdom of Persia. This is an evil demon who withstood one of God's angels for 21 days. So a powerful angel, powerful demon who was able to withstand one of God's. Let's check that. That's in Daniel 10. Daniel 10 and verse 10. Daniel 10:10, suddenly a hand touched me. And this is that angelic being with Daniel. A hand touched me, which made me tremble on my knees and on the palms of my hands. This hand of the messenger angel coming to Daniel. And then look what it says in verse 13. But the prince of the kingdom of Persia, and this is a demonic being, this is one of Satan's army, withstood me, the angel, 21 days, and behold, Michael, one of the chief princes, so here a more powerful angel coming, came to help me, for I've been left alone there with the king of Persia, kings of Persia. So we can't see them, but we should never doubt that these other angels, these fallen angels, are an invisible part of this world and are working to sway as best they can. And I think we see a lot of their influence out there now, as perhaps they're being allowed to have greater influence. So Michael, too, has angels under him in this spiritual battle. We could go to Revelation 12:7. I'll just read. And war broke out in heaven. Michael and his angels fought with the dragon, and the dragon and his angels fought. So these are two armies. They're organized spiritual governments of angels, one being of God, one being of Satan. Very real things out there. Another one, we feel that Gabriel is likely another one of these chief princes in the angelic realm, although not actually ever called an archangel. You know, I kind of thought he was. If someone had asked me to list three archangels, I would have said, well, Michael and Gabriel and Lucifer before he fell. But our booklet there informed me that Gabriel appears to be one of the chief princes in this angelic realm, but he's never actually labeled an archangel in the Bible. Luke 1:19 says, he stands in the presence of God. And so that's very special, something about the angel Gabriel. His name means strong man of God, and he does appear to be an angel of great authority. And then Lucifer, who is one of the two covering cherubim at the throne of God, although again, never labeled as an archangel. So it was something I learned. But if not, I'm not saying, and our booklet isn't saying, that Gabriel and Lucifer weren't, just that they aren't described or labeled that way. But if not, Lucifer was certainly a very high-ranking good angel before he rebelled. And some feel that Gabriel was the other covering cherubim, although the identity of that angel isn't made clear. So let's now look at an angel who appeared to humans to see what we can pick up. And hold your place in Daniel 10. We'll be back here very shortly. But I wanted to go forward to Matthew 28 and start seeing these beings, start seeing some of these angels, some of this army that one day we'll see with the return of Christ. Matthew 28 and verse 1. And so we're at the tomb here after Christ has been crucified, and this is a time of just the greatest sadness as Christ has been killed. And this is one of those times when terrible sadness changes to incredible happiness in just a moment, which we can see as we go forward, is likely to see. And now Verse 1, now after the Sabbath, as the first day of the week began to dawn, Mary Magdalene and the other Mary came to see the tomb. And behold, there was a great earthquake, had been is the intent here. There had been a great earthquake. An angel of the Lord descended from heaven and came and rolled back the stone from the door and sat on it. So here we have one of these angels. And this is a messenger angel in the role of messenger. His countenance was like lightning. Here we have that brightness again. And his clothing was white as snow. And the guards, for what they were seeing, was so powerful, shook for fear of him and became like dead men. So, in other words, they fainted away from what we're seeing here, what's being described to us. Details were given for this angel are, and I again just brought some slides with images to try to picture what we're being told. Clothing as white as snow. And when we lived in the mountains, it snowed a lot up there in Virginia. It was cold enough the snow would stay, and over time it got dirty and really kind of ugly. Auto exhaust, tires, whatever. And then another snow would come and cover it, and it was beautiful white again, and a special quiet with that. But this white as snow represents purity here associated with this angel and the great brightness. Also associated, very bright like lightning. And so I put a bold lightning bolt there. And you know how that can kind of startle your eyes, the brightness when you see a bolt. So we get the most details, I think, about the appearance of these angels in Daniel 10. So that's why I was saying hold your place there. And it's kind of one of my favorite spots here as we read about these and we consider spirit beings and just what they might look like, and future children of God. Daniel 10 and verse 4. Now on the 24th day of the first month, as I, and this is Daniel speaking here, was by the side of the great river, that is the Tigris, I lifted my eyes and looked, behold, a certain man. And this again is an angelic being coming to see Daniel, clothed in linen, whose waist was girded with the gold of Uphaz. And this is unusually pure gold back at that time that we're being told about here. And clothed in linen, we find the same in Ezekiel 9 and 10 and Daniel 12 and Revelation 15, and this fine linen being a symbol again of purity. Voice 6, his body was like beryl, his face like the appearance of lightning. So we're being told a lot here. His eyes like torches of fire, his arms and feet like burnished bronze in color. This is what this angel looks like. And the sound of his words like the voice of a multitude. So the angel looks like a man, has the form of a human, but again, very powerful. And next slide. As I was considering the description, and Daniel's using what he best can to describe what he's seeing, and he said his body looks like beryl. And so I searched on that gemstone, and I found out that it comes in many colors. Those are all different stones cut from beryl or beryl gemstones, and it's a beautiful gemstone. And consider the colors. And what we're told about this angel is his body looks like that, but we don't know which color. We don't know the color of this angel's body from that description, but you can picture an amazing being whose body looks sparkling like those different colors and what God's children might look like in the future. Hey, I might need help boosting one more slide forward. There we go to more images there. So to try to see these, and again, Daniel's using what he best can to describe what he's seeing. His face was like lightning, eyes like torches of fire, arms, feet like polished bronze. This angel is a remarkable being standing before Daniel there in terms of both beauty and power. So again, consider the implications of this for James, when that seventh trump sounds for the resurrection of humans into a body resembling that of Christ. And I indicated when I started that Children have features resembling their parents, and it's more than we can imagine. Verse 8 here, "Then I was left alone when I saw this great vision, and no strength remained in me." It just kind of drained him. "Looking upon a being like this, my vigor was turned to frailty in me, and I retained no strength." Just seeing a being like this took the strength out of Daniel, like the men at Christ's grave. And these were guards, presumably strong men, fainting away. And it appears here that Daniel did the same thing, from gazing on this angelic messenger sent by God. Verse 9, "Yet I heard the sound of his words, and while I heard the sound of his words, I was in a deep sleep on my face, with my face on the ground." It sounds like he fell to the ground, all the strength coming out of him. Our booklet makes a point that angels usually do appear in the form that Daniel saw. They look like humans. They're adult. They're male. And if age is suggested, they appear to be younger, like younger men. In Mark's account of the women at Christ's tomb, they saw a young man clothed in a long white robe for that angelic being that came to those women. And it doesn't mean that angels actually are male. It doesn't mean this is how they look in their true glorious spirit form. We do know they don't look the way humans have popularized them, which is often as cute little babies with wings. Beautiful. And these being called cherubs or cherubim, when you see them, and we'll soon see that these are not at all like God's actual cherubim, another class of angels. We also see them popularly depicted as adult humans with wings and halos, as we see on the right here. And, you know, I do remember being young in the Baptist or mainstream church, maybe 10 or 12 years old, and wondering. I guess we just didn't go there very much because we didn't know. Is that what you look like, quote, when you get to heaven? This one on the right here, I didn't know. Or do we actually become angels? I was unsure at that age. But when angels appear to humans, the types or ones we've seen so far, they're never described like this. They're never described with wings. Where does that come from? Do any of God's angels have wings? As we look at what we're told. So let's shift gears some. Some angels do look different from what we've seen so far. Look in Ezekiel 1. It's another area that is really a fascinating area here in Ezekiel. Ezekiel 1, and this is Ezekiel's vision of God in the title heading in my Bible here, section heading. Angelic beings are described here who aren't there to deliver messages themselves, as we saw in Matthew and in Daniel, but these beings are transporting God to Ezekiel, as God has decided to come and visit with Ezekiel. If we continued into chapter 2, God has reached and is the one who speaks to Ezekiel, and I should say this is the God who became Christ. This again is the Yahweh, the Eternal. And before reading here in Ezekiel, let me read some from the UCG Bible commentary about Ezekiel 1. The first chapter of Ezekiel is one of the most revealing and exciting in the entire Bible. As I said, this is an exciting set of verses here. Of all the men whom God inspired to write the scriptures, only three, Isaiah, Ezekiel, and the Apostle John, recorded visions of God's throne. And so that was in Daniel 7. We were there. Ezekiel gives the most detail. These are remarkable verses. Again, I'm just reading from our commentary when I say that. So then let's look there in Ezekiel 1. And we're not going to be able to adequately picture what Ezekiel sees and describes here, but again, I've made an attempt just to give us some feeling with some slides to help. Verse 1, Now it came to pass in the 30th year of the fourth month, on the fifth day of that month, as I was among the captives by the river Chebar, that the heavens were opened, and I saw visions of God. Ezekiel here. On the fifth day of the month, which was in the fifth year of King Jehoiakim's captivity, the word of the Lord came expressively to Ezekiel, the priest, the son of Buzi, in the land of the Chaldeans by the river Chebar, and the hand of the Lord was upon him there, or the presence. And then, and I'll advance slides, and this is something I just made from what is being said here, verse 4. Then I looked, and behold, a whirlwind was coming out of the north. So this is what he sees approaching him, a great cloud with raging fire engulfing itself, and brightness was all around it. Again, this brightness, and radiating out of its midst like the color of amber out of the midst of the fire. So he sees a glowing, fiery whirlwind coming out of a bright sky toward Ezekiel, and something like a sparkling amber in the center of the whirling flame. So I put something like that in the center here to try to give us an idea of what he's standing there and seeing. In verse 5, also from within it came the likeness of four living creatures. So these are angelic beings, four living creatures, and they're transporting God's throne as God is coming, as Yahweh is coming to visit Ezekiel. And this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. Again, we see each one had four faces, and each one had four wings. So this type of angel does have wings. Their legs were straight, and the soles of their feet were like the soles of calf's feet. They sparkled like the color of burnished bronze. So burnished means polished. And yeah, I think I need help again for the next slide. And so I put some polished bronze up there, and then a bronze polished calf foot. The NIV says, you know, that calf foot's closer to home for me. I pass those every day out where I work. I've had them step on my feet. They're pretty heavy when there's a big cow on top of it. But the NIV says their feet were like those of a calf. These are these angels, and gleamed like polished bronze. These angels appear at least in part like other angels, with legs and feet looking like polished bronze, and arms too. And we could look at Christ in Revelation 1. I won't go there, but it's also described with feet looking like polished brass. In verse 10 here, as for the likeness of their faces, each had the face of a man. These four living creatures transporting God's throne. Of a man, each had the face of a lion on the right side. Each had the face of an ox on the left side. And each of the four had the face of an eagle. So I won't go there just yet, but Ezekiel 10 tells us these angels are cherubim. Cherubim angels, a different class of angels from the messenger class we read about and saw in Matthew and saw in Daniel. These four angels here bringing one of the gods to visit Ezekiel. Verse 10, the last part, we find the four faces of these angels. And so, next slide. I've put that up there, one like a man, so I'm being careful we're not to make images of anything in heaven. I just have a silhouette there. So as for these four angels having faces like a lion, our commentary suggests that really the lion, which you can see at the zoo, our king of the beasts, was made by God with a face resembling that of a long pre-existing cherubim. Verse 11, thus were their faces, their wings stretched upward, two wings of each one touched one another, and two covered their bodies. And each went forward, straight forward, they went wherever the Spirit wanted, so God's Spirit, they're following, to go, and they did not turn when they went. So there's more here about the appearance of these angels, beginning of verse 13, and the likeness of the living creatures, their appearance was like burning coals of fire. And I think next slide, I searched on burning coals of fire and got some. Yeah, okay, and so we continually see this brightness of these spirit beings, and overall these presented like burning coals of fire, and were described here. These are very impressive beings, as we see more about them. And going between these transporters of God's throne, next slide, please. In verse 13, as we continue in that verse, appearance of torches going back and forth among the living creatures. So just ambience of power. It looked like torches, like fire shooting back and forth between these beings, but more than that, and out of the fire went lightning. So this is the type of power associated with the living creatures transporting God's throne. And the living creatures ran back and forth in appearance like a flash of lightning with speed. So Ezekiel next gives us his description of the vehicle these angels use to transport God. And I'm not going to read through that. I won't read about it. But we do find interesting things associated about that. For instance, has wheels full of eyes, this vehicle transporting the throne. And you know, some UFO enthusiasts look at this as a biblical recording of an alien vehicle, a spaceship that has come, which I find interesting, as it seems we're going to view the returning Christ as an alien coming back for us. And for the rims of the wheels of this vehicle being full of eyes, and we'll find as we move forward that some angels are described that way as well. The Berean Study Bible says one of a number in biblical literature, eyes often represent knowledge and awareness. The presence of eyes all around the rims of the vehicle transporting the throne indicates that God sees all things, and nothing is hidden from his sight, and he is fully aware of all events and actions. So more words about this from our Bible commentary. Ezekiel sees a great windstorm coming, an immense cloud with flashing lightning surrounded by brilliant light. The center of the fire looked like glowing, sparkling gold. That was Ezekiel 1:4. The image is of a transportable throne moving about the earth, and the Lord who sits on this particular throne is the pre-incarnate Jesus Christ. So again, I'm reading from our commentary. As the whirlwind approached, Ezekiel was able to make out the likeness of the four living creatures, angelic beings. These are referred to in Ezekiel 10, and we saw that. As cherubs or cherubim are referred to it. I guess we didn't go there. So again, that's one of the types of angels described in the Bible, in God's word for us. Maybe we should go ahead and take a look at that. It's just around the corner, Ezekiel 10. And verify for these angels as we carry forward a little bit to chapter 10, carrying this throne. And I looked, verse 1, and there in the firmament that was above the head of the cherubim, there appeared, so here they're called cherubim, these four living creatures, there appeared something like a sapphire stone having the appearance of the likeness of a throne. Then he, and this is the God being here, spoke to the man clothed in linen. So this is another angelic being here, and said, go in among the wheels under the cherub. Cherub and cherubim, same thing. Fill your hands with coals of fire from among the cherubim and scatter them over the city. And he went in, and I watched. So we find these living creatures are described as being cherubim, and the man in linen is another angel here, entering the space between the whirling wheels and beneath the cherubim. And so now go back to chapter 1 commentary there, and this is the cherubim. Their function is to uphold and transport the throne of God, and this was their appearance. They had the likeness of a man. So they're referring to Ezekiel 1:5 that we read. They had the general appearance of human beings at first glance. However, there were marked differences. Each one had four faces. So I usually don't think of angels this way. These angelic beings, just incredible strength and power in their description, had four faces, four wings, and feet like calves' feet that sparkled like bronze. And I'll paraphrase some from the commentary now as it describes how the human faces were the ones that were looking toward Ezekiel as his throne came toward him on these four living creatures. The human faces were the ones that were facing Ezekiel, and the eagle faces were looking the other way. The ox faces were looking to the left, and the lion face looking to the right. This is one of those examples, and you keep finding them if you look, or as you look in the Bible, and it's where I say that this book just fits together too well. When I was counseling for baptism, he said, "Why do you think this is real?" And I said, "This book fits together too well to have been authored by humans." And this, it might not jump out at us this way, but is one of those examples to not be God's word, what it says it is, the word of God, and in ways that we might never suspect here. These faces on these living creatures, these directions have meaning that I personally would have never picked up on. The throne is coming from the north, so you might pretend that north is behind me, and so this throne is coming towards you, and the eagle faces then are looking back that way, back toward the north, as is coming, and the human faces of these four cherubim, the ones looking toward Ezekiel, are facing south. As this throne is approaching, the west face of each is like that of the ox, and the east face of each cherubim is like that of a lion. Do we find anything like this anywhere else as God is working out his plan? And back to the UCG commentary, for these faces on this approaching throne on a cherubim, this is the exact configuration of the Israelite camp in the wilderness where the four primal tribal standards of Israel, that's the lion of Judah, the eagle of Dan, the bull of Ephraim, you know, as God is building this family, and the man representing Reuben were positioned around the ancient tabernacle containing the Ark of the Covenant. And so what did that Ark represent? There it represented God's throne, the thing being transported here. And I always ask myself, do things like this happen by accident? This moving throne tying precisely to how God designed the Ark of the Covenant and its surroundings, is that a coincidence, or perhaps God really is the author of this book? Which is what seeing things like this, I think we have to acknowledge, has to be the case. Are there other accounts of cherubim or cherub angels transporting God on his throne? And there are. A cherub transported God when he came to save David, and that's in 2 Samuel 22. 7 to 11, I'll just read from these verses. In my distress, how many times have we done this? And Philip mentioned there are a number of people in distress here, and it's important for us to remember that. In my distress, I called upon the Lord and cried out to my God. He heard my voice from his temple. David was very special to God, and my cry entered his ears. He bowed to heavens and came down with darkness under his feet. He rode on a cherub. As this God, this is the Yahweh, again, the Eternal. He rode upon a cherub and flew, and this is repeated in Psalm 18, verses 7 to 10, again by David. And he rode upon a cherub, yea, and to fly upon the wings of the wind. And this, again, being a reference to the God who later came in physical form as human form as Christ. When you see this and this throne being transported, I don't know what it makes you think about. It makes me think sometimes, do these angels ride on vehicles themselves as they're going places God sends them? And you know, we have airplane pilots, commercial pilots, who say, "I saw something." and they seem very reasonable and sober people, and it's not like anything I've ever seen. It could move so fast, and you wonder, are they seeing angelic beings in transport vehicles? I have no idea, but it does make me wonder. So our booklet at this point summarizes this kind of angel, these cherubim. They are described as having four wings. Two of this type of angel cover God's throne with their wings. Four of this type of angel transport God's throne, and this is Yahweh. They have a general human form, but a head with four faces and feet like an ox. So we've seen messenger angels, we've seen cherubim. What other kinds of angels are there from these two classes? Are there other classifications of these beings of angels mentioned, and what are they? We also find seraphim, a familiar word, I'm sure. It's a word that literally means burning angels, and it's talking about their brightness again, just the brightness of this type of angels and still others that are probably different. We don't really know yet, but for example, the four living creatures of Revelation and the 24 elders of Revelation, all angelic beings, do these look like messenger angels? Do they look like cherubim? We don't know. For these seraphim, literally meaning the burning ones, again, this class of angels, look in Isaiah 6, and we'll find a mention. Isaiah 6 and verse 1, in the year of King Uzziah, that King Uzziah died, I saw the Lord sitting on a throne. So here we have one of those three who had a vision of God's throne, high and lifted up, and the train of his robe filled the temple, and it stood, above it stood seraphim. Each one of these had six wings. With two he covered his face, with two he covered his feet, and with two he flew. And one cried to another and said, "Holy, holy, holy is the Lord of hosts. The whole earth is full of his glory," as they are above God's throne. As with Ezekiel, which was years later, Isaiah here sees a vision of God's throne. There are no throne details here, but it is attended by spirit beings. These are angelic beings, and they include here what are called the seraphim. Angelic beings that may be a different class of angel here from the cherubim that we saw in Ezekiel transporting God's throne. And remember, those two also look like burning coals of fire, this theme of brightness. Or could these seraphim be a type of cherubim? And we're not told a whole lot. What we find out are these features. They have six wings. They use two to cover their face, two to cover their feet, and two to fly. They hover above God's throne, and they sing praises to God. Then there are angels called the four living creatures in Revelation. So I notice the same language as we saw in Ezekiel. Let's go to Revelation 4. I think we can finish here in Revelation. Revelation 4, and see more angels here. Revelation 4 and verse 2. Immediately I was in the Spirit, so this is John in vision, and behold, a throne. And here's that last vision of God's throne, set in heaven, and one sat on the throne. In verse 6, before the throne there was a sea of glass like crystal. It's so beautiful. And in the midst of the throne and above the throne were four, and around the throne were four living creatures. And here we find those eyes again, full of eyes in front and back. So what do we pick up from John's vision of these angels here? They have six wings, like seraphim. The cherubim in Ezekiel had four wings. And our commentary asks about that, if the whirling fans of God's transport vehicle, and that was why I mentioned that, although it didn't read, could have been another pair of the wings of these angels, also giving those angels six wings. It's just a question raised by the commentary with the indication we don't know. They are full of eyes, symbolically representing full of vision. They have four different faces, a lion, a calf, an eagle, and a human. And our commentary again asks, let's see, did I read that? Is that in verse 7? The first living creature was like a lion. The second living creature was like a calf. The third had the face of a man. The fourth was like a flying eagle. So of these faces, our commentary asks if they may each have four faces, with John only seeing the one facing him at the time. And the question then becomes, are these four living creatures around God's thrones the same ones that transported God's throne to Ezekiel, or are they similar but also different angels? More about them, they never rest. Spirit beings don't need to. They praise God continually. I imagine that they wouldn't trade jobs for anything and greatly enjoy where they are and what they're being allowed to do and get to be a part of. These are highly invested beings who have decided to stay loyal to God and to the plan that he's working out. After messenger angels, cherubim, seraphim, and four living creatures, God's word also describes the 24 elders. So this is the last group, possibly a final category of angelic beings at the throne of God. And we find in Revelation 4 and 5 only provide what we know about them. So let's see what we can pick up. Anything about these? Revelation 4 and verse 4. Around the throne were 24 thrones. Around God's throne, he has 24 thrones. And on the thrones, I saw 24 elders. These are angels, angelic beings sitting, clothed in white robes, and they had crowns of gold on their head. In Revelation 5, verse 6, and I looked, and behold, in the midst of the throne, and of the four living creatures, and in the midst of the elders stood a lamb, as though it had been slain. So we know who this is, that this is Christ. Here, having seven horns and seven eyes, which are the seven spirits of God sent out to the earth. Then he came and took the scroll out of the hand of him who sat on the throne. God's hand, and we're familiar with what we're leading up to here, and Mr. Ross Sr. worked through these and what they are. Now when he had taken the scroll, the four living creatures and the 24 elders fell down before the Lamb, each having a harp and golden bowls full of incense, which are the prayers of the saints. And they sang a new song, saying, "You are worthy to take the scroll and to open its seals, for you were slain and have redeemed us to God by your blood. Out of every tribe and tongue and people and nations have made us." So there's a superscript beside that "us" in my New King James. And this is really a poor translation. That should be "we are them," have redeemed them. This is talking really about God's children, God's people, God's church, them to God by your blood, verse 10, and have made them kings, looking forward then, and priests to our God, and they, it should say, shall reign on the earth. And I looked and I heard the voice of many angels around the throne, and so we've read about that, how many are there. And the living creatures and the elders, and the number of them was, and here we have that number we found in Daniel, 10,000 times 10,000, and thousands of thousands more were there, saying, so that's 100 million plus millions, saying with a loud voice, "Worthy is the Lamb who was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. And every creature which is in heaven and on the earth and under the sea, and such as are in the sea and all that are in them, I heard saying, blessing and honor and glory and power be to him who sits on the throne and to the Lamb forever." Praising God here. And this song they sang, verse 9 through 10, I indicated is not translated perfectly here in the New King James. I can read from the New Living Bible, or really most any other translation you'll look at. They sang a new song, these angels, singing, "You are worthy to take the scroll and break its seals and open it, for you were slaughtered and your blood has ransomed people." So this is us, and this is the family plan for God from every tribe and language and people and nation. You have made them to become a kingdom of priests for our God, and they will reign on the earth. That same message. They will reign on the earth, and the meek will inherit the earth. So how much more are we told about the appearance of the 24 elders? What we get here is they are dressed in white clothing. They each sit on a throne and have a golden crown. So these angels evidently have a high role in administration in the angelic realm under the rule of God. Their crowns indicate they are, at least by rank, a different class of angels. And think about this. They sing praises to God and they sing hymns about us on our behalf. Another sign of the angelic role, serving God's chosen people. What should we think from the focus of these very high-ranking angels, which is on God's people today? And this apparently is ongoing or frequent, singing about God's called ones, about the first fruits. And finally, we're not told what these beings look like. So I've been asking since we started, why did God create the angels? Why are they here? And our booklet emphasizes the role of angels in God's goal of bringing humans into spirit family, and that's the basic answer. These amazing beings we're looking at were created to help bring you, us, into God's spirit family. That's why they were created. We saw the huge angelic host with Christ leading God's chosen nation out of Egypt. We saw the job of Michael, the archangel, standing watch over your people. We saw the 24 elders have to be amazing angels, sing about God's plan to make his people kings and priests who reign on the earth. The angels were created for the spirit family plan, for us sitting here, as amazing and as powerful as they are. Our book also emphasizes that humans, on top of all this, have a greater purpose and future than even these angelic beings, these amazing, beautiful, powerful beings we've been reviewing today. Makes you think again about the resurrection, doesn't it? As we consider, and I just wanted to close with a thought. We know that some fallen angels have higher ranking and evidently more powerful form than others. This Prince of Persia, for example, that withstood one of God's angels for 21 days, the demon Christ's disciples couldn't cast out. They said, we were unable to cast him out, which Christ described as this kind goes out only with prayer and fasting. Reviewing the different types of loyal angels to God, and knowing that one-third of the angels that rebelled, knowing Lucifer is described as a cherubim, just what does Lucifer look like? It made me wonder something I hadn't really thought much about before, the same classes of angels represented in the demons. Is this why Christ said, this kind goes out only by fasting? It's interesting thoughts, I think, for another day. Very, very amazing beings, part of an amazing plan.